We would like to thank Karen and Jake Abelevis for sponsoring this morning's Lachsimer. Eli Nishmas, Jake's lovely parents, Leah Ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yehoshua Ben Shimon Dov. Their neshamas should have an aliyah. We are in the middle of Mishnah 16 in the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avos. We started it last week. We will continue with it now. We'll briefly review the main points and review the cliffhanger and question that we left off last week's shear with. So the Mishnah, generally, broadly speaking, is talking about different types of love, conditional love, unconditional love. So we start off saying, Kol ahava shi tuluya b'davar, batal davar, batal ahava. If there is any love that is dependent on a thing, and we'll have to define what this thing is, then once that thing ceases to exist, the love itself ceases to exist. But she'eino tuluya b'davar, if it is not dependent on a davar, on a thing, also not defined as of yet, eino b'teilu l'olam, it will never cease to exist. That love will be eternal. Ezohi ava hatluya b'davar, what is an example of love that is dependent on a thing, on something? Zu avas Amnon v'samar. That is the love, or perhaps lust, passion that Amnon felt for his half-sister Tamar. V'she'eino tluya b'davar, what's an example of a love that is not dependent on anything else? That is the love, zu avas David v'yonasan, the love that David and Yonasan felt for each other. As we stated last week, there are several different possibilities as to what we're talking about in terms of love being dependent or love being unconditional. Rabbeinu Yonah describes in source number one, we'll just do it outside because we focused on it last week, that the David and Yonasan's love are considered not dependent on anything. He focuses on the fact that Yonasan had a lot to lose from that relationship, and he himself was damaged because he would have been the heir to the throne, and the fact that David is now set to take over the throne provides personal damage for Yonasan himself, and the fact that he was still dedicated and committed and loved David despite that proves that it is an unconditional love, because if there was a personal gain, if there was some ego involved, which we would assume would be davar, something that we would be conditional, then he wouldn't have sacrificed himself. But the self-sacrifice, the altruism that Yehonasan felt for David and demonstrated shows that it is something that is not dependent on anything else. Rambam described this independent or unconditional love as the words he used here. I bolded it in this version, Inyan Eloki, something eternal, something divine in terms of what that love symbolizes. Relatively abstract for us, we're not exactly sure what that means, but you can tell that there's something special going on here, that this love has something more than a material, physical love, but there's something spiritual as well, and that's made even clearer in the Pirkei Moshe, who we spent the bulk of our time last time elaborating on, where he talks about the difference between love that is dependent on materialism, on chomer, on something that is physical, that by definition will not last, but love that is based on tov, as he calls it, that it's good, it's inherently good, that's how he relates, it's his parallel to the Rambam's Eloki, that divine, the good, that will last forever. So now we want to start, as we did at the end of last week's shiur, to make this a little bit more down to earth, right? As of right now, and maybe we can't. Maybe that's the whole point. Maybe this love that is undefinable, spiritual, can't be put, articulated into words that well, but we're going to attempt to do so a little bit better. And if not, maybe by the end we'll have to step back and say, you know, maybe we can't fully define what love is and conditional. Maybe the conditional love is easy to define, but the unconditional might be a little bit more difficult, but we're going to attempt to do so anyway. So this source that we skipped last week, I said it outside, I want to spend a little bit of time on it inside. It's source number four, the Derech Chaim of the Maharal. The Maharal has an interesting starting point where he says, and I think this helps us make this a little bit more practical because the two paradigms that we're using are extremes, right? We have a love that is not dependent on anything, and then we have a love that's totally dependent on something. Presumably, most of our loves are somewhere that are dependent on partial elements and sometimes not dependent. So there's sort of like a middle ground here that's lost in this Mishnah. It's not articulated clearly in the Mishnah. So the Maharal sets up that space for us, and that's probably the space where we are going to be, where we're going to be playing with, living with, dealing with in our daily lives. So he says here, he starts off, the beginning we'll not read inside, but he says, why are these two extremes, right? You have Yonasan, David and Yonasan on one side, and you have Amnon and Tamar on the other side. Where's the middle ground? So he says, Kiyesh Ahava, Afal Gavshi Tluya Bedavar, Mikom Mikom Eina Tluya Bedavar Legamre. This is the third, end of the third line, beginning of the fourth line. You have love that is dependent on something, but it's not completely dependent on something. Ki af im lo haya oso adavar haya kan ava, af al gav shabada adavar gorem ava yasera. So you have sometimes where the love is dependent on something to some extent, that when that thing is present, the love is even more intense, but when that thing is not present, there's still some element of love. Right? There's gradations. So it's not completely dependent, again, because even if that thing, that davar, is absent, then there's still some element of love. So the Mishnah wanted to give us these extreme cases to sort of bring out the point. We want an example of a love that is completely dependent, or a love that's completely independent. So the love that's completely dependent is Abbas, Amnon, Vitamar, because that, the whole love was totally dependent on passion, on intimate relationships. And because of that, on sexual relationships, and because of that, once that goes away, Kasher Avar Zeh Hayakan Sine Yesera, then not only is there not love, it's actually hate. So that love was totally dependent, and once that is gone, the reason is gone, then there's no more love. And on the opposite side, you have the other extreme, is David and Yohonasan, is Abba that's not dependent on anything. This love is not contingent on anything. He doesn't really elaborate on that, but he tells us, Vishar Abos Einam Legamre Tzulim Bedavar, V'Einam Legamre She'Einam Tzulim Bedavar. But besides for those two paradigms, everything else has some elements of dependency and some elements of independency. Rak tzas ahava teluya bedavar, tzas ahava eina teluya, v'ahava kezos eina betela miyad. So this type of love, again, this type of love that we're probably dealing with in our own lives for the most part, is not, once it's gone, once this thing, whatever that contingency is gone, doesn't dissolve completely, like it would with Amnon and Tamar, but Eino Gamkin Mekamet Legamre, but it's also not something that's necessarily eternal, Kamo Abbas David V'Yonasan. So we're in the middle here. There's a love that's somewhat dependent, somewhat independent, I'm imposing the we. He's not saying that. But he's saying that you have these two extremes, and then you have a middle ground that the Mishnah is not discussing, where it's somewhat dependent, somewhat independent. It's not that just because something goes wrong, now the love is completely gone, but if enough of those things continue to go wrong and continue to be a problem over time, then the love eventually could dissolve and it could dissipate and disappear. So it's not a black and white, all or nothing, it's either I love you or I hate you type of relationship, but it's somewhere of there are some things that are dependent, some things that are independent, and it's a little more complicated. It's not as black and white. And now, he has an interesting point here. He says, if you look in the story of David and Yohonasan, so the words that they use for each other is Nifles Avas Chali Me'Avas Nashim. Yohonasan says, I love you more than I love women. Now, how do we understand that? So he says, Ki Avas Nashim Teluya Bedavar. So he said, now, this just to start us off in the rest of the Maharal, This is going to be very man-centric, right? This is going to be coming from the perspective of men. I think we could read it in both ways. The Maharal probably would not, for various reasons, as he, in his time and his thought in the 16th century, was, you know, different than we conceptualize the relationship between men and women now. But I think that, again, we're going to be reading it from the perspective of how this relates to men. But I think that in modern times, the same reading can be done in terms of going from man to woman and from woman to man. But again, it's going to be a man-centric reading. Ki avas nashim tluya b'davar. So the love that a man has for women, for womankind, as it were, is dependent. Mipnei sha'isha ezer kinegdo. So there, one aspect of this love between from men to women is that the woman is there ezer kinegdo, as we read in Parshas Bereishis, is there to help him, and she's there to be his helpmate, however you want to understand ezer kinegdo, we're not going to get into now, but there's some element of a unconditional, there's a more, like if you want to call it spiritual, there's a more eternal, this is the good type of love, of the ezer kinegdo love, but there's also eina tluya b'davar legamrei, shekach bara kadosh baruch hu olamo, the ezer kinegdo is contingent, okay, so rewind 10 seconds, the ezer kinegdo is contingent, it's tluya b'davar, that you're there to help me, but then, if you're not helping me, right, that's contingent, then the love's not necessarily going to be there. That's the contingent part. What's the non-contingent part? The eino tluya b'davar legamrei, shekach bara kadosh baruch hu olamo shiyeh lebasar echad. The more eternal part, the non-contingent part, is this more, if you want to call it spiritual or holy way of looking at it. It's not a reciprocity. It's not just about what are you doing for me lately, but there's more of that we are together as one. It's more of a united together. Maybe a combination of souls, depends how you want to understand this, but this is the more eternal, spiritual, non-dependent part of the male-female relationship, that it's not dependent. Kedichsiv b'kraz, it says, al ken yazov ish es aviv es imo, right, and you're going to connect, v'davak b'ishto v'yulu b'sar echad, there's some metaphysical, deeper, stronger connection that is going on within this relationship. U'bevadai ein ha-kosud medaber shi'azov es aviv es imo v'davak b'ishto mishum she'isha hila hanaso. Obviously, this pasuk is saying that you should leave your parents' house and get married and connect and become one with a woman is not for your own pleasure. That's not what the pasuk, that's not what the verse is talking about. This is part of the natural way of the world, how the world is supposed to work, is that the man connects to the woman, again, on this more holier, elevated, not reciprocal, not pleasure-based type of relationship. And that's why this is that part of the love is non-contingent. Okay, so again, we have the love of Tamar and of Amnon and Tamar is completely about pleasure. That's contingent. You have David and Yonasan, which is completely, again, he doesn't define it, but let's just call it spiritual. That's not contingent. Other relationships besides those paradigms, if we look at a love between a husband and a wife, there's elements of contingency and elements of non-contingency, conditional and unconditional parts to it. So now, Va'amar ki nifleis avas chali avas nashim ki sof sof yesad shavas isha shitluya b'davar she isha haya le'ezer lo. So the reason why Yonasan says your love is more than the love that men have for women is because technically the love that men have for women has an element of contingency, of conditional, that it's conditional. What is it? Because that ezer lo, right? There's a reciprocal working relationship that the woman is there to help, and again, 21st century terms, the man is there to give back to the woman. I think that's true even in the Maharal's time, but again, just the way we phrase it, that she'isha hi le'ezer lo. And let's say the wife or the relationship is not working to the point where people are helping each other, they're growing together, they're there for each other. So then that part of the relationship now dissipates, and therefore the love is not completely a unconditional love, right? Kasher hi kenegdo betela ahava shi be'etzem abria. Then that part of the love is going to disappear. So that's man woman love. Avas David Yohonas and this deep friendship. There was nothing contingent about it. That's why he says that it's more than just a relationship between men and women. So that's the main point. He's going to end off with, I think, what is another interesting point. But the main point for now is that most of relationships that we have in our own lives have elements of things that are conditional, things that are unconditional. And things move, things are dynamic, things sometimes are working in a positive way, and sometimes things are working in a negative way. And there's a back and forth, and maybe there's a commitment that allows some leeway when things aren't working so well, that even though this element of the love isn't working right now, I know that next week, in a month, in 2 months, or whatever, it's going to get better, so I'm willing to stay in it for the long haul. But at a certain point, if those things keep getting knocked down and that part of the love, there's no reciprocity, there's no feeling of commitment, of love, of passion, then that eventually could dissipate. And that is the paradigm of most relationships that we have. Now, he ends off and David Yohonasan is an example of, again, I'm not sure how common this is, and the fact that we have to look to David and Yonasan as a paradigm, you know, it's that deep friendship bond that's not dependent on anything. He doesn't even go on here, at least in this paragraph, to describe it so well, because I think it is hard to articulate. But the point here is that it transcends the reciprocity, any element of reciprocity, any element of conditional and contingency. It's just complete, total, endless, boundless, enduring, eternal love. Now he ends off with an interesting point. It doesn't say that Yonasan loved David more than a man loves a particular woman. He says, "Umasha amar mi abas nashim." He says how men in general love women in general, right? Broadly speaking, he says that that's a little strange. It should have said, "Vayalu lamar me abas." Isha, as a man loves a particular woman. So he's, but this is his whole point. There is always going to be something in one-on-one individual relationships between a man and a woman that there's something that the other side is going to do that's going to decrease the love. It's going to put a little bit of a gap. There's going to be some behavior, some part of the personality, something that's going to create a distance. V'lachach amar niflis avas chalima avas nashim, klomar me avas sheyesh lenashim. So he says, no, it's not about a particular individual relationship, because every individual relationship, even between husband and wife, has elements that are going to be that are going to be contingent on in that moment, in that fight, in that disagreement. Right? Again, it doesn't mean the relationship's over, but there's something there that's going to create a friction. So that's not his point. Well, one second, Paula. Let's just finish this sentence. And so he says, that's why he says it's not about one man to one woman. He says it's about the global idea about how a man loves women in general. Right? It's about this broad sort of romantic idea about women in general. But once you get to like the nitty-gritty day-to-day actual relationship, then there's automatically going to be something there that each person is going to get on the other person's nerves on some level. Now there might be examples of that where that's not true, maybe a paradigm of a perfect relationship. Those are few and far between. For most people, this is the day-to-day of married life. It's that there are some things that are great and awesome and amazing and are, you know, that eino tliya b'davar, it's everlasting. And then there are some things that are tliya b'davar, that actual day-to-day grind, relationship struggles, frictions, disagreements, those can, you know, the love can go like this. Now, again, if there's enough commitment and big picture non-contingent love, then you get through those hard times. But over time, if there's continual friction and there's no hope, and it doesn't seem like there's any of that non-conditional love that's present anymore, and that's when a relationship deteriorates. Again, point being for now is that the reason why Yohanan uses this terminology of love of broad speaking, womankind in general, is because once you get on the individual level, it might lose some of that romanticism of the point that he's trying to make. I guess that's the Maharal's point, and I'm sure there's a lot to think about here and to unpack and unwind in terms of our own relationships. I'll let you do that work on your own. Before we get to the Tiferes Yisrael, Pola, what do you got for us?
Yeah, nowadays couples sign a prenuptial agreement. How do we categorize that kind of love?
I think that's the whole point. Meaning the prenuptial agreement, on some level is takes away, or can be looked at as, you're taking away some of the excitement. You're sort of like, you know, hedging your bets, as it were, before the marriage. Yet, we see the need for it because of the fact that what can happen is that passionate romantic love that at the time of marriage the couple might think can last and will last forever might not, right? I think that's the exact point, Pola, is that we might get too infatuated or too romantic where we forget that what the Maharal is really setting up for us is that most of us don't live in those paradigms. Most of us live in the day-to-day difficulty of relationships. Now, again, we can look at you and John and say, you know, 70, close to, what are we up to? How many years of marriage? 65, 70?
60.
60. Sorry, yeah, 70 is too much. Right? That's a lot of years of love. That, again, you stand out as an example, but that's not necessarily guaranteed. So there is some level of hedging, as it were, and realism in terms of the essential parts of why we sign prenuptial, why the rabbis suggest that we sign a prenuptial agreement. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the marriage is going to end. It obviously doesn't, but it's realistic in terms of what that marriage is all about. Actually, Peggy, I believe Daniel signed my prenuptial agreement. I remember, yeah. So he came with us and to the Notary Republic, and he's one of our witnesses.
I would like to say something to you.
Yes, Rabbi Shloni.
Okay. I think this is Pirkei Avot. This is not just the story. There is a love here and the love here. What does it teach us?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's exactly what the Rambam says. There are two extremes. And you have to go b'shvil hazahav. You cannot, don't go to the utmost extreme. Number one, it's impossible, almost impossible. And number two, it may destroy the whole love. You know the song about, do you love me, from Fiddler on the Roof? And he says, what do you mean about that? I say that, and I cook for you, and I do that, and this. What do you mean? So real life is in the middle, in the middle. So the Mishnah here wants to tell us, if you are too much on one side, then go to the other extreme in order to be in the middle.
Okay, so I'm going to agree with you on one level, but I want to clarify. So number one, I think you're thinking correctly, and this is the direction we want to go in terms of, this isn't just philosophy, this isn't just theory. Pirkei Avos, usually our assumption, for the most part, has been correct. Has some element of a takeaway that we're supposed to learn from it. At least that's the assumption of most commentaries. So the question is, what do we take away from it?
I just wanted to say one thing. You talked about prenup, but you have the Tnaim, which is a legal document. You have the Ketubah, which is a legal document. So a prenup is just another legal document. The marriage is a legal agreement.
Right.
With money and tna'im that are exchanged right from the get-go.
Right. So
I don't think necessarily dampens the marriage or the relationship, may just give peace of mind and then go on from there.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, the concept of a prenup is not fundamentally different than those other things that are related to marriage. I think we just don't necessarily understand when they read the ksuba underneath the chuppah what it means. But yes, there is that inherent part to the marriage, regardless of the prenup. So again, I'm totally for a prenup. Everybody should get a prenup. And you know, whether or not it dampens the romanticism, just like a ksuba or a tanai might, you know, that might be part of the point, right? We live in a world of reality where we need to deal with these things in a healthy way for that couple, as well as broadly speaking, even if that couple lives long, happily and ever after, we need to create some sort of communal policy where we have things that are accepted by everybody for the exceptions to the rule. But just getting to Rabbi Shiloni's point, I think that it is true. Again, number one, we want to be looking at this with an eye for practicality. But number two is that I would say this is what you're suggesting is exactly what the Maharal is doing, right? The Mishnah talks about these two paradigms. Now, you could have made the argument that the Mishnah wants us to get to that love between David and Yehonasan, right? We have two paradigms. Here's a bad one. Don't follow this. That's one takeaway. That's, you know, I guess a pretty easy one. Passionate love, especially when it's at the expense of somebody else is terrible. It's wrong. And then on the other extreme is here, aspire, be like David and Yonasan. What the Maharal is doing, and what Shoni you're suggesting, but I'm not sure this is exactly what the Maharal is doing, and I'm not sure I all the commentators would do this. You're saying is that the Mishnah is telling us to go to the middle. Now, I want to be clear that the Mishnah doesn't say that, right? The Mishnah just gives us two extremes. Now, you might want to, as you said, the Rambam may say, you know, you need some moderation here. The Maharal is saying, I think, slightly different. He's saying that that's not, again, he doesn't make it to our lives. I'm making the connection to our lives, but I think this is what he's doing, is that we have to live more in the practical side of things. I'm not sure I want to go all the way with you in terms of going to the other extreme. So let's say I have a David and Yehonasan love. That means I go to the other extreme of the Amnon and Tamar love. I don't think that's true. I think they're saying you don't want any part of this Amnon and Tamar love. Not that there's no place of passion within a relationship, but I think you're on mute. But I think the Amnon and Tamar love is more of a degenerate type of passion that's not healthy. I think that has to be tempered with some level of intimacy, emotional intimacy, personality connection, commitment over the long term. But I just want to be careful. I think it doesn't fit as easily into the two extremes and middle path as you're making it. But I think that as a broadly speaking idea, it could be that the Mishnah is talking in extremes and we don't necessarily live in those extremes, and we have to be practical and to realize that. How that then comes into a practical ramification, I think, is a little more complicated than just going, you know, jumping from one extreme to the other. But that might depend on the situation. Yes, Rabbi Shlomo.
There is a haftal ve'haftal le'reacha kamocha, and there is ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha. Et Hashem Elokecha, it's unconditional love. And ve'ahavta le'reacha kamocha, again, it says kamocha, so it diminished from ve'ahavta le'reacha, period.
Right.
So there is something between a man and a man, or a man and a woman, doesn't matter, that has some dependency. It has to have, because this is life. This is reality.
Right.
There's no way for extreme. It's a rak HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have a love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's extreme. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, good. Okay, so we'll bring God into this towards the end. But I think that, you know, your point here is well taken as well, bringing in Vahavta L'Recha Kamocha, and the discussion and almost debate that goes on in that pasuk in terms of, can you actually love somebody like you love yourself, right? To what extent is your ego too involved in your life that you can't possibly love somebody as you love yourself. Right? So that is a discussion there, and as in fact the Ramban, Nachmanides, says over there that it's a guzma, that it's an exaggeration, because you can't possibly love somebody as much as you love yourself. Now, how does that fit into David and Yohonasan? How does that fit into a love between a parent and a child, or between a real great romantic relationship that's positive and healthy? And so I think there's something to discuss there, and we'll see some sources on that in a minute. Let's get to Freda, and then we're going to move forward. Yeah.
So I just want to say that Tamar and Amnon and Tamar was also an example of a very one-sided love,
mm-hmm.
whereas David and Yehonatan was perfectly reciprocal. And I think that should be part of the discussion also, that when it's totally one-sided, it's just not going to last. It's not going to be good, because it's dependent only on that one side. Whereas a reciprocal love carries, I mean, I know, you know, 50-50, 40-60, but somewhat of an equal balance between the two. And then it doesn't matter if you're talking man and woman, or man and man, or woman and woman.
Right.
I mean, women's friendships are very different than men's, but you still have, is it a reciprocal love or is it one-sided?
Yeah, and I for
think
sure.
That should be part of
For sure. I mean, I think it is part of the discussion. The element of that relationship that's unhealthy, not just because of the love, but because it was morally wrong, right? It was something that, not just that it was, meaning I could have, you know, I love somebody else, but I don't do anything wrong about it. I don't pursue it in a mean, aggressive, immoral, illegal way, that could also not be a good relationship. So that's one element of the fact that it's not reciprocal. There's not two people involved. It's just one-sided. That's obviously not going to last. But I would venture to argue that the Mishnah would say the same thing if it was reciprocal, right? Let's say Amnon and Tamar had a reciprocally passionate relationship with each other that was totally dependent on physical needs. My guess is that the Mishnah would say that itself is also a contingent love that would not last. It happens to be that this was even worse than that, that it was one-sided. But I think as far as the way I'm reading the Mishnah and the commentaries, is that even that would be contingent, because it is contingent on physical desire. It's not just about the two-sidedness. But it's a good point anyway to keep in mind that one-sided element. Okay, so let's go now into source number 5. We started this last week. I'm going to briefly recap what we did, and then we'll read inside the new part that we haven't done. And as I do it, I'll show you the part that I highlighted, so you can see it inside. So Tiferes Yisrael starts off by saying that anything that is, what is this davar, right? Love the dependent on a thing. So the thing so far we've said is either it's dependent on passion, physical, material, right? So he says is that anything that is outside of that's external to the actual love, like the any time where I love somebody because of something I'm getting, that's davar. Right? If if it's pleasure, if it's goods, if it's services, that's why I love you. It's because of that. Then that's dependent on something. So anytime rak es davar shekabel humimenu gam ba'asin nimsa shirak es atzma oev. So he argues that I don't really love you, I love myself. Right? Because I love the things you give me. Okay, so that's his starting point. Then he says, so what's a love that's not dependent? So remember, it's a little bit interesting that the example given is David and Yohonasan. It doesn't talk about a parent to a child, doesn't talk about a husband to a wife. So what does this symbolize? So what's a love that's not dependent? So he says, it's rak b'teva, so it's natural. Gahavas adam levanav u'mishpachto. So he does insert that an unconditional love is a love that a parent has to their children and to their family. Or another type of unconditional love is a love that's of ideas, b'haseichel, that somebody loves wisdom, somebody loves good deeds and morality and ethics, or has fear of God. All of those are love. Interesting that fear of God is love, but that's a deeper conversation. But all of those things, these concepts can be there. You could have an unconditional love of good, right? And that's sort of overlaps with what the Rambam and the Pirkei Moshe were saying, this Inyan Eloki. But it's not just Inyan Eloki in somebody else. It's the concepts. It's the abstract concepts that I love. Wisdom, morality, justice, right? These are things that I can love. But he says, and we said this last week, Eini yodea laseis lanu tama davar. You might not be able to articulate why that is, what that love comes from. Why do I love this thing? I can't really generate any language to that. Zeu abba she'eino tzuliyah b'davar emsayi she'beino oivlanav. That's unconditional love. I can't describe it. It's just there. It's natural. But then he says, what if I love a person because of the fact that they are a good person or a wise person? So he argues that that is conditional love. So if I love the abstract concepts, unconditional. But if I love those abstract concepts as they are embodied in somebody else, that's conditional love. Why? Because what happens when that person chooses to not embody those concepts? They are no longer a good person. They're no longer a wise person. Then I no longer have that love for them. So that's conditional love. Unconditional concepts, conditional when people embody those concepts. That's very important, right? And that introduces the point here, which we're going to elaborate on the next page, which is, well, what about David and Yohonasan? What type of love is that? Is it about the fact that they love the goodness in each other? Well, what if one of them stops being good? Then are they still going to love each other? Is that still unconditional love? So hold that question in mind. And he says here, this part we didn't do last week, I believe. So he says, Amnon and Tamar. So here's the paradigm for the bad relationship. Delo es Tamar avrachis atzmo. Amnon didn't love Tamar, he loved himself. Avura anashayim etzapel asmumena, because of the pleasure that he expected to get from her. Va'anahihi adavar emsayish beinu avlanav. This pleasure is the connector between the loved and the beloved. And because of that, it's dependent, right? It's the mediator between that love. Therefore, once that pleasure dissolves, he started hating her. So now he says, Ulam, Shalot Tiksha, Im Kain. If that's the case, Heichan Matzinu, Ava, Shabin Adam Machaveru, Shalotia, Tulia Badavarma. So then, where's your example of a love that's not contingent? Then every love has something. Any interpersonal love, as Rabbi Shloni pointed out a few minutes ago, must have some level of contingency involved. And if that happens, then that relationship will end, or that love will end. So he says, but I do have a paradigm. What's that paradigm? Va'avas avla bein eino machras. So he says, you can't bring in a love a father has for a son or a parent has for a child. That doesn't prove anything. The eino rak avas atzma. Very fascinating. The love that a parent has for a child is actually self-love. Midehu etza me'atzam avu basar mibsaro, because it's they're me, right? They're part of me. They're my genes. They came from me. Va'reze kemoshi av adam liyadov raglo she'enim aroy lechanozo av. It's like the love you have for your own body, for your own self, that's not considered love. So therefore, we need a different example. So a few interesting things to unpack here. Number one is, first of all, he's assuming that a love a parent has for a child is unconditional. And now that is, I think, the story we like to tell ourselves, and for the most part is true. But unfortunately, if you look out in the real world, that isn't always the case. So I like this view. I like to think about it like this. I just want to acknowledge that there are exceptions to this rule as well, where that you could have a parent who literally has contingent love for their children. But that's not his assumption. His assumption is it's totally non-contingent. But he says that that doesn't prove anything. That's not a real example. That's not what our Mishnah is talking about. Our Mishnah is not talking about a love that a parent has for a child, because that's almost a complete self-love. And I don't think he means that in an ego way or in a negative way, but he's saying it's not what we're trying to get at. We're trying to get at a relationship, a love, an interpersonal love that's not a familial love. It's not about
how much you love a child. And therefore, David and Yohanan are the paradigm. Now, the question still stands. Is this love of David and Yohanan really non-contingent on anything? So he says, "Shelo esatzuya b'shum davar ba'olam." It wasn't. It wasn't dependent on anything. "Vaisakdolo b'midasa kabas avleben." It was even greater than the love a father has for a son. "Shei afshar shetitbatal." Can never dissipate. It can never go away. "Afilu kishlo yisnaga ben kishura." And when, let's say, go back to the parent-child relationship, if the child is not behaving appropriately, his assumption here is that the father would still love the son, but this love was even greater than that. Kamosh Kasav, Lat Leonar Lav Shalom, then Kasav Yohanan Apshis Shama, Lachar Kashikamino Mahuso, even though, this is getting back to the Rabbeinu Yonah's point from before, even though David was going to take away the kingdom from him, he still loved. And that's, if you have any other bigger thing in the world in terms of what could have been contingent, right? I love you up until the point that I'm not going to be able to be the king anymore because of you, right? That would be conditional. The fact that he still loves him, even though he's taking away the kingship from him, shows that they can't be possibly be dependent on anything, because you just took away the most important thing in the world and I still love you. That proves that it's unconditional love. I'm not sure what that stands for. Nafsho b'sakana avuro. He put his life on the line in order to save David. And now he ends off with a fascinating idea. He says, "Umatzinu dugmasa ba'olam v'nikrases simpatisha liaba." So I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correct, but it looks like some sort of sympathetic love. What does that mean? "Debez b'nei adam afshol ikiru zed zem mi'olam. So he says there are some times where people who've never met before, they meet for the first time and they immediately, you know, it's love at first sight, but not in a romantic sense, in a friendship sense. You have friendship at first sight. So he's saying that this friendship at first sight is a deep, non-contingent friendship, and it's blitam. There's no explanation. I can't explain it. We just hit it off. And he ends off by saying, "V'yesh lezet tam ne'alam." There is a hidden, amazing, deep secret as to why this is true. Why it could be that two people who've never met before all of a sudden just hit it off in such an important way. So we're gonna elaborate on this in a second. But before we do, I want to put a sort of a full pause and stop, because it's a sort of a tangent to his main point. The main point is that this love between David and Yohanan was non-contingent on anything. It was more even than a love, obviously, between man and woman, according to what we're describing, and between even a parent and a child, because he was willing to give up everything for him, which proves that it's non-contingent. Now, we still have to understand it. He doesn't really explain what the source of that love is. And I think this is where he's going with this. Sometimes there's no explanation. I can't articulate it, right? And he's saying sometimes we find this in the real world, this type of close relationship, and we can't fully explain it. V'yesh lezet tam ne'alam. It's sort of like this mystical idea that we can't articulate. So what is he referring to here? So if you look here, there's a concept from the Arizal where it's quoted here in the Sefer Olas Chodesh, it's from the Masifta on Perkei Avos, which I've referenced a lot in the past. So this is a photocopy, a brief picture from the source that he quotes here in the name of the Arizal. And that is, Be'er Inyan Avazu. What is this type of love that it's so unconditional, connection, first sight? Shiba mitzad shishorshe nishmoseyem shel ha'oavim hayukruvos zu lezu. So he says that it's because, again, this is a mystical, metaphysical explanation. I can't prove this one way or the other, but this is the mystical explanation, that the sources of these two people's souls were connected to each other somehow. Vizelushono, lifamim nira, shnei anashim oavim ne'manim zelazet. Sometimes you find such a deep bond, such a close relationship. Veloshum korva deshar zelazet. Kizem misof olam, vizem misof olam, and they never knew each other. They're from different parts of the world. Va'avasam avas olam, but their love is this huge, great, big world, eternal love. Avash einu tzlib dabar, it's not contingent on anything. V'tema, ech ba avazu, ve'ech gad ba ava kokach. How did this deep love come? They didn't even know each other. Where does this come from? Yan avur shayu nishmoseyem smuchos. Chavros ki'ish el achosa, ba'anaf echad, ba'Allah echad, ba'kad echad, ba'adam shay yechidi ba'olam, ba'adam eitz oseh pri. They come, their souls come from the same place. Upri peros ad olam, ba'neshamos ha'primios margishos zu bezu, and then when they meet, umis oreres harishonos avos yishonos, this love that they, it's reawakening this, their loves of the closeness of their souls that existed, you know, pre their physical body. So yidvukos umikurvos, v'lefichach aovos alababos yachtav, v'tvar esha ava b'neim b'in shneim, and that's why this love is so deep and connected. It's because their souls are connected. V'ein hagufos margishos ama v'lama avarab, and they can't explain it because it's not part of this world. It's an otherworldly love and connection. This is love of the souls. It's not just love of anything physical, right? So here's the sort of the deep mystical explanation behind this. You could, in theory, give psychological explanations that are more this worldly. There is actually some research on this type of friendship where people just connect automatically, and what the personality traits are required for both to have in order for that sort of friendship at first sight to happen. But on a deeper mystical level, the explanation of the Arizal is because their souls were connected, and because of that, you know, you could sort of connect this to, even though I doubt the Rambam would say something exactly the same, but the point here is that it's a spiritual connection, it's a deeper connection, it's inyan Eloki, as the Rambam said. It's about tov, it's about good, it's about souls being connected together, and that's why this relationship between Dov and Yonasan is eternal. He's willing to give up everything for them, totally altruistic. It's not dependent on anything. You can give me all the money in the world, all the physical, take away physical pleasures, it doesn't matter. I'm there. I love you. I'm connected. I'm committed. That's the love that David had for Yehonasan. Okay, it's a beautiful idea, and if I was smart, I would have ended off with that. But instead, we are going we're gonna take it back a notch. Okay, so it creates this beautiful vision of this eternal friendship that, again, non-contingent, souls in heaven, beautiful, right? But I'm still bothered. Maybe I'm too much of a realist and a practical person here. I'm still bothered. What if one of them started fighting, right? Meaning, our assumption here is that, no, they can never disagree. They just love each other. They're always going to have a good time. And what if one of them changed? What if one of them started acting differently? Right? We know people change. We know you can have a best friend when you're 20, soulmates, inseparable, BFFs forever, and then by the time you're 30, it's not just about distance. It's you change. You have a different personality. You've grown. You've matured. That one's less mature, and that one hasn't grown up yet. And then, okay, so but let's say, no, your best friend's at 30. Your best friend's at 40. But then by your 50, now you're a little bit more cynical. You're a little bit this. You're a little bit that. They're starting to get on your nerves, right? So, again, relationships are, you know, assuming they last for so long. Maybe this one lasted, you know, because it ended, you know, when they were relatively young. But, you know, once the relationship continues to go, there's so many things that can change over time. It's so hard to say that this love is forever and it's not contingent on anything. What if David loved Yonasan, or Yonasan loved David because he was such a good person? What if they stopped becoming a good person? You could say, oh, he can never stop becoming a good person. Well, then you're sort of taking away free will here, right? So what happens if they don't act the same way anymore? So here's the Maharam Shik. Again, a little bit of a damper on the previous beautiful, romantic, eternal love that we just ended off with. So the Maharam Shik here says, and we're not going to read the whole thing inside, but he frames the question just like we asked. What would happen if the reason, you can't tell if it's persons, if it's individuals, there's something there. There's some interaction, there's some reciprocity, there's something. And if that starts to dissipate, what happens to the relationship? Where can you tell me that's really eternal? So I'll tell you, if you look, let me see if I could pick out the line.
The Mishnah says it, batel adavar, batel ahava. That's it.
Right, so the Maharam Shik is saying, even with David and Yohanan, right? So because what the Maharam Shik is basically saying is that I can't envision any interpersonal relationship that is not talui, it's not dependent on something. The Mishnah is not saying that. The Mishnah seems to be saying that there is a paradigm, maybe, even if it just happened once, there is a paradigm of a relationship that's non-contingent, that is totally forever and cannot be broken. The Maharam Shik is bothered by even having one example of that. Once you're talking about human beings, and there has to be some level of dependency. Or let's put it this way. Even if it's independent now, how can you guarantee me that it's going to last forever? Because if you want to say that that an independent love is based on spiritual goodness, moral behavior, wisdom, all of those things, what people change. So what if that person changes? That's the question. So the Maharam Shik doesn't say, no, he's never going to change. No, the love's going to last forever. He basically sets up the system and explains the Mishnah that what we're saying here is that you want to do sort of like a time stop, right? We want to frame that love in that moment. And that love is love in that moment. Love or it's not love. So if, let's look at Amnon and Tamar. If Amnon and Tamar are passionately in, it's one-sided, Amnon's passionately in love with Tamar. Snapshot, right there. Is that love or is it not love? So because that love is clearly physical and clearly dependent, we are going to judge, even in that moment, that's not love. Right? And we can look at Amnon and he could come to you and tell you, Dad, I love her. Right? Or, you're his friend. You wouldn't believe, I'm head over heels. I fell in love. I'm going to love her forever. I'm going to, it's going to be. And you're looking at it and you see it's just a passionate love. You can say either to him or to yourself, right? This love is not love. In that moment, even when he's passionately in love. David and Yohanan. Snapshot in that moment. Unconditional love. Unconditional. Is that love love? Yes. And you give it a stamp. 100%. That is love. But he says, if it stops, then it stops. It could stop. David could change. Yohanan can change. The love can change. So what's the difference? The difference is in that moment, in that snapshot, it still was love. For Amnon and Tamar, it was never love. Even in that snapshot, it's not love. And it will dissipate. 100%. There's no question about it. That passion will disappear. So it's not love now, and it will stop. But with David and Yohanan, snapshot, that is love. In theory, that could last forever. If they both adapt and grow and have that goodness that continues, and it could. But he's willing to say, and I think this is accurate, it's a realistic way of looking at life. In theory, they could both change. And if they both do change, that love could change as well. And maybe that love will stop. And once that love stops, it stops. It doesn't take away the fact that they had a good 10 years of unconditional, of that love, because as their personalities were in that snapshot, it was full-fledged 100% love. But Einach and Ami, it's possible that they both will change, and if they change, then the love could dissipate. It doesn't take away the past, right? But it doesn't last forever. And I think that's, again, I think a more realistic way of looking at friendship that doesn't right. take away the passion and the commitment and the strongness of it, but it does take into account the fact that we live in a world where personalities are dynamic and people change all the time. We have a little bit more, but I don't think I'm gonna do it. I'll just throw you a hint if you want to look at it on your own. Source number 9 has an interesting sort of cute read. Where I have to stop. I have to have a better word for cute. I don't have to think about it. But he says that Dvar here is actually Dibor, language. And it relates on some level to what we've been talking about in terms of the difficulty of articulating. But he says that if the love is just dependent on Dibor, it's dependent on language, which means I talk the talk, right? I can convince you with my words that I love you, but in character and personality and inside, I don't really do it, right? So I'm able to manipulate you as you were with my language, and that's not really love. And I think that's something we could all intuit. So he uses the word Dvar here as Dibor. Love that's dependent on language is not full love. If it's only about language. And then finally, the last source frames this love, as Rabbi Shiloni alluded to, in terms of love between God and the Jewish people. So we'll just read this one. We'll close with this and leave it as sort of like a taster. Kol ava shitzuya b'davar batal davar batla ava. Bezu ava shitzuya b'davar. That's ava. Tana de Be'eliyahu is another source from Chazal. Gives different examples. Kigon avas Bilam ben Beor u'Balak ben Sipor melech Moav. That relationship between Bilam and Balak, which I think is an interesting way of doing this, because it moves it from a romantic, even the bad relationship, it moves it from a romantic, passionate relationship to a relationship based on materialistic gain. So it's another example of a contingent love, Balak and Bilam. And then what's the example of She'ena Tzuli B'davar, Eina B'Tela La'olam? Kigon, what's a good example of good love? Avas Avram Yitzhak V'Yakov, Lahain, Ulivnehen, Ulivne V'Nehen, Ad Sof Kol Hadoros. It is the love that Avram Yitzhak and Yaakov has to their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, to all of us for all of the generations. And I'm sorry, it got, I meant to quote here the Maharal. The Maharal jumps off of this, this Tana de Be'eliyahu and talks about this love between Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, the Avos, that they have for all of their descendants, including us, and then spins off and talks about the love that God has for us and basically takes the Mishnah, it's not really the Mishnah, this is based off the Tana de Be'eliyahu, takes it off in a different direction in terms of the love that God has for us, and we could talk about the love that we have for God. But because it's not directly tied to the Mishnah, I've decided to not do that. It's probably a mistake. It's always good to talk about that type of love. Maybe we'll start off next week with something along those lines. But you could read this concept or at least relate it to not just an interpersonal love, but a love between man and God and God and man. Again, I don't think that's what the Mishnah is really talking about. I think the Mishnah is purposefully using human relationships. I think that's the main message of the Mishnah. But you could sort of spin off and talk about that type of relationship between man and God and God and man, how contingent or non-contingent should those relationships be?
5, 6,
how, one second. How passionate or non-passionate those relationships should be? I will decide over the week whether or not we'll start next week off with that. Otherwise, we'll just go straight into the next Mishnah. Okay. Yes. Questions.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Yes. I just wanted to say something. So, talking about the love between Hashem and us, look how we have disappointed him since the beginning. And Hashem promised he would love us always, even though he came close to destroying us, you know, after Chet HaEgel and Meraglim and all those trials in the Midbar. And yet Hashem is still sticking with us. So it's like a married couple, because after all, in Shir HaShirim, aren't we compared? Hashem and Bnei Yisrael are compared, you know, right. In that way.
So
you know, everybody has to work at it.
So Barbara, I'll tell you that one of the reasons why I sort of avoided bringing this up was because of what you're saying now. It's very complicated, right? it opens up because it's not just about relationship now. Now it's very theological. I would argue, and there's Nevi'im that talk about this, and obviously philosophers and Chazal, I would not compare. I would be wary of totally comparing the relationship between God and his people to a couple, because couples could get divorced, right? So, the paradigm that you use is important here, and it just opens up a whole host of theological issues, which, again, I will decide over the course of the week if we'll get into that. If it was directly related to the Mishnah, I would. But my read is that it's somewhat tangential. So I'm not sure I want to get into it now. Maybe we could do a spinoff share. But yeah, so that's why, Barbara, just keep in mind that it's more complicated than that, but definitely worth exploring at some point. Yes, Fagi.
Just like any relationship.
Correct.
I would be inclined to say that even though the Mishnah is talking about the kinds of love that are not conditional to something, that really there is no relationship in humans that is not conditional to some degree. And that at some point in time, depending on if the people will change for whatever reason. So even the ultimate, you could say, parents with children, God forbid if something happens where the child is a drug addict, it doesn't mean that the parent doesn't love them, but there is a change in the relationship when different kinds of behavior come in. So every relationship, as you said, is in that moment in time. Yes, it can be completely unconditional because Yonatan with David was completely almost irrational to us because he was so, he should have been so much more in competition with David, but he loved him as the person he was and he understood his value. And that is why we revere that kind of relationship. But as you said, if any person in that relationship will change, then it will change. So that means there is some portion of it that is conditional.
Right. And that's why I ended off with the Maharam Shik instead of the, sort of the mystical, more romantic vision of these types of relationships. I think that it is. Now, I would argue to you, as let's just say in terms of parenting, when I said before that there are, you see that there are conditional, that it just exists that there are conditional relationships in parenting. That I was not suggesting that that's the good approach, right?
No.
the best approach, even or I would say especially, even though it's hard to do, especially with children who are, giving you a hard time, as it were, with whatever that means that the love should still and perhaps be even more unconditional, and they need the love even more, and that should generally be the approach. That doesn't mean there aren't rules. It doesn't mean that everything goes. It doesn't mean that there, again, it gets complicated. But in terms of the overall approach, the best overall approach in even difficult relationships, is to have, to try to have, it's not easy all the time, that unconditional commitment and love, to the children. That's what's best for them and probably, best for you or whoever we're talking about, as well.